When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, back from his three-month holiday. Craig Burley joins us. Sure, Robson here as well.
Long, very
Moreno alongside me to reflect on what we saw in the Champions League today. Real Madrid through, but boy, were they made to fight for it. It would be 1-1 on the night. Vinicius Junior opened the scoring. Orban would get the equaliser. Leipzig pushing to get that second. We would have seen us go into extra time. In the end, though, Real Madrid in the quarter-final draw. But I think it's fair to say they were lucky.
It would have been difficult to tell today, Craig, if you didn't know which team was going to go on and win La Liga and which team was labouring in the Bundesliga.
Not many teams go to Bernabeu and have 20 efforts on goal. They were caught between what they wanted to do at the beginning of the game. Do we want to sit in, hit on the counter because we're 1-0 up, which is not the daftest thing to do. But then they got a few punches in the face from Leipzig going forward. They didn't take their chances. They had to be clinical, particularly in the first half. They were not. And then I think Real Madrid never quite got out of that flux they were in, where, well, hold on, we're supposed to be just trying to defend this lead. And I think we saw today why there's going to have to be a big improvement in this Real Madrid side to win this competition. Yeah. They're probably going to win La Liga, but not because they're great. Because Girona have finally hit the buffers. Because Barcelona haven't been great. Because Atletico Madrid, since around the Christmas period, have sort of fallen away a little bit. And that's probably going to allow them to win La Liga as we're sitting here now. It might change, I don't think so. But not this competition. Not unless they get players back or they improve. Because that. And also, I don't like the way that you set up today with the in the main, particularly early on with Bellingham playing almost as a second centre forward. Whenever I've seen him play like that, it's never really worked for them. And you never see the best of those players when they play in that formation.
But this isn't necessarily a surprise if we've seen Real Madrid over the last few weeks. We keep waiting for them to get out of this funk, and they just don't seem to be able to do so.
The built-in excuse over the last month would have been that, well, you know what, after the Girona game, Jude Bellingham got injured, so no Bellingham, maybe issues for Real Madrid. Perhaps that's why they haven't been explosive. Well, today was Jude Bellingham on the field, and yet you continue to see some of the frailties that they have defensively and some of the inconsistency that they have through the midfield and offensively. What I would say, the setup. And I think that's a really good point from Craig's perspective, that the setup today by Carlo Ancelotti never allowed this team to truly take a handle and control of the game. Because we just mentioned Jude Bellingham as being a second center forward. Well, in order for him to be a second center forward, there's got to be a first center forward. And there is no first center forward because the design would have been for Vini and Bellingham to be playing together. And actually, Vini just throws himself all the way to the left. If now Bellingham is withdrawn from the attacking line, then who's playing up top?
Yeah.
And if indeed you're going to counter, if this is the way that you're going to set up, that you're going to absorb some pressure, you're going to go and counter, well, you need an outlet. You need an outlet ball, and that outlet ball has to go to that center forward, whoever that may be, that can play with a little bit with the back to goal, hold the ball up a little bit so that everybody can catch up in the attack, and then you get a moment of transition. But it was always win the ball or try to force a turnover, then find Vini on the left-hand side. Everybody from Leipzig collapses to Vini. He either goes on a run all by himself or he cuts back and then passes the ball forward, and now passes the ball back, and all the momentum is gone. And it happened time and time again. Beyond that, the possession today from Real Madrid, not dynamic, not quick enough, predictable in the attack. They got themselves into trouble. There's a reason as to why Camavinga comes up at halftime, because it was turnover after turnover. The truth of the matter is, Real Madrid are fortunate that they went through today. Fortunate, because Leipzig, they just show the flaws that they have shown all season long in Bundesliga. They can't score.
Yeah.
They create chances. They have talented players, but they get in front of goal and there is very little conviction in their attempts, or at the very least conviction when they're about to finish. They don't seem to be that sort of team.
It's fair. If Leipzig were a team who could convert in the final third, Real Madrid would be out.
Yes, Openda had two really good chances. One, he scuffed with his left foot, which was a really poor effort. Another one with his right foot, which he never looked like finishing. Sesko, even when he was offside and ran through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, he didn't look as though he was ever going to finish. And that was the case in the first leg, because in the first leg, Leipzig were the better team. And it was only Brahim Diaz, I think Real Madrid only had one or two shots in the whole game. But going back to the point you were making, not only was Vinny Jr. going out to the left-hand side, not only was Bellingham coming deeper, but they played Valverde on the right-hand side. There wasn't even Rodrigo on the right-hand side. When they've played on the counter-attack before, they've had those two wide players and Jude Bellingham in the hole behind. They didn't even have Rodrigo on the pitch. Valverde was playing almost like an inside right. And there was one point in the first half, the two players in the most advanced areas was Mendy and Carvajal. Yeah. They were playing through the centre-forward positions. That can't be right. And it suggests to me that Ancelotti was scared of the game.
There's twice I've seen Bellingham kind of play. I think he's played it maybe once or twice more. But the Atleti game away.
Yeah, when they lost.
When they lost, they were horrible.
Yeah.
He was anonymous. Mm. And I think it was Vinicius that played up. They might have been Hossler. I can't remember. But it was another striker. And Ancelotti tried to go with Bellingham sort of up there and then peeling back now and again. Didn't work. But then the Girona game was recently where they trounced Girona, where they didn't play with Vinicius and Rodrigo as his hybrid, but they played with them wide, as wide as they can. But there was a reason for that. It was to keep the Girona fullbacks back. It was to stretch this back line. It was to isolate the two centre-halves because Daley Blind was not available. It was makeshift. And what Bellingham did then, he kind of played in a half and half position, so he was overflooding the midfield, so they dominated in there, and then he was making deep runs, and then those guys were coming from the wide positions inside. They were giving them all sorts of problems. I just feel when he plays up there, he's kind of stuck in his own mind and what that role is. He's a great player, right, but he is much better when he's coming onto it from deep than he is when he's starting in that position. And I agree with everybody. Real Madrid are very, very lucky. And RB Leipzig would go back to Germany saying, do you know what? We could have taken a huge scalp here. Most but we can't finish.
Yep.
And that's what the game's all about.
So looking forward, can Real Madrid improve their levels of play to be on par, to be able to compete? I think it's fair to say Manchester City, Arsenal, probably the two best teams in Europe at the moment.
At the moment.
Thrown into Milan.
At the moment,
well,
I would say no.
Why not?
Because I don't think Ancelotti's confident about playing two up front and Bellingham in behind against the big teams or in big games. He showed that today. I mean, he's got three holding midfield players almost, then Valverde coming deeper. We saw it against Valencia at the weekend. The first half, when Valencia were causing all sorts of problems, he did the same sort of thing where he went wide with the two wide players, but there was no one through the middle that they could play to. In the second half, they changed slightly and Rodrigo played narrower and he didn't last that long on the pitch. And Vinicius Junior played narrower. And then they had something to play off. So it's up to Ancelotti to get these tactics right. But I don't think at the moment they've got the personnel to play with a dynamic game at the moment.
If we get into that stage of the season where that is going to come home to bite them in the backside.
Because the quality of the opposition.
January's come and gone. Yeah. The replacements didn't come in. He wanted defenders. He wanted a centre-half. You know, they've had big problems there. It didn't happen. Let's be honest, he's coped admirably with what he's had to... Nah, people won't feel sorry for him. It's Ancelotti, it's Real Madrid. Who wants to feel sorry for them? But from a football perspective, you look at the players that either left the club or get injured pre-season or right at the start of the season, and they've dealt admirably with that, albeit they've been helped by one or two of the teams in La Liga dropping off. But I just wonder now if that's coming back to take its toll on them, where it's taken them so far, might take them probably to the La Liga title, but we're in the crux of the season now, the business end, and they look to me as if they're just starting to falter.
And structurally, they have a problem in the attack that they haven't been able to address just yet. And obviously, it's too late now. They're not going to address it. Mm. You're looking at a team that whenever they attack from the right-hand side, if it is Carvajal, let's say Valverde gets forward, let's say Rodrigo gets down the line, he is about to cross the ball. And there's nobody attacking the middle of that box. Whether that's Bellingham that is supposed to run from deep. If he's not him, Vinny is over there parked on the left-hand side. And when I say parked, I mean he's out there outside the 18-yard box. So there are no options inside the 18-yard box. And the same similarly happens from the left-hand side. When Vinny is able to turn the corner and he's looking up, who am I serving the ball into? If it's not Bellingham, it's nobody else.
You made the point while we were watching the game. Because against Valencia, Vinicius Junior comes at the far post twice in the game and scores. There was today, now I think Valverde got down the right-hand side and we were watching the game, and then you could see Vinicius almost on the touchline on the other side of the field, and Bellingham was trying to make that ground up. It was almost impossible for them to get anything from the right-hand side into the box and find anybody.
So depends Real Madrid... depends what mindset he's in, doesn't it?
Yeah, so Real Madrid through to the next round. We learned today, meanwhile, domestically, they will have no Jude Bellingham for the next two matches, who is suspended because of Riera's reaction to the goal being chalked off late on at Mestalla. Ali, you called this game. It's the first time we've had to have this conversation.
Yep.
Did he deserve the red card?
I suppose you don't go and do this to a referee, but I gotta tell you. You cannot analyze this without taking into consideration that the referee has brought this situation upon himself, and at that moment he became hypersensitive. He knows he's messed up. And so now he's hearing everything that everybody is saying to him. And whoever gets close to him at that point, which is a mistake that Jude Bellingham makes, and says whatever he says, you're going to get some sort of punishment. But this comes from the referee making a mistake. Again, he becomes hypersensitive, and I have to believe that during the match, players from both teams would have said completely worse things than whatever Jude Bellingham had to say, they reported.
Yeah, it's not an effing goal.
Correct.
That's what he said.
Correct. And that cannot be enough.
But I suppose
Hold on, it's not a goal.
Sorry? No, it is.
But I'm a little confused here. What's the mistake that the referee made?
So he blows the whistle as the cross is coming in.
Yeah, but the time was up.
But the general consensus is that in football, that's...
No. But 1 second. I was just, you know, as you know, I didn't see this because I've been away. I've seen the clips of it. To me, once the ball comes in and it's cleared to the left-hand side...
Yes.
Right, the referee goes to his lips then.
But yeah, but he doesn't blow the whistle until the cross goes in.
He brings it back down.
So he thinks about it,
and then he was going to let the cross come in, and then he decided, oh, well, I've put the whistle to my mouth before, now I better blow the whistle.
As the ball is
coming across into the box.
But then that's the argument, is the time up or is the time not up?
Well, the general consensus from everyone is that normally you would let this attacking phase finish. You either blow the whistle now, or you let it play on until whatever happens.
And apparently the referee said to the players, this is the last chance, we'll play till, you know, this is your last chance, when the corner was taken.
But you can see the Bellingham reaction. Does he deserve a red card?
That's ambiguous. Look, in the face of it, I would say no. Because if I run up to a referee, now I don't know what he said here. But I don't know what he said at the time and I don't know what he said after. By running up to the referee, I don't think that's a red card, gesticulating. But if you do it and then do it again, we've seen that this season.
Yeah.
I think it was a Liverpool game.
Yes.
It was like a double. Yeah, I think it was Dalot. Where he went like that, got a booking. Yeah. And 5 seconds later, he went like that and he got another booking. So we don't know. I think on the face of running up to the referee, it's a yellow card.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
Unless he has used a language that is...
Well, he's used the F word, but he's talking about the goal and not the referee.
Yes.
That's what Sid Lowe was making the argument during the weekend.
Yeah.
That basically if he called the referee...
And he was more worried by the manner and approach of Bellingham than he was about the swearing.
So you think two matches is...
I don't think he deserved two matches. I think it's touch and go whether he deserves a red card. I think in previous shows I've said it's a red card. I think his manner, we can't encourage players to do that. So the referee, and you're absolutely right, he's hypersensitive, he's made a mistake, he's now under a lot of pressure. Somebody goes up to him. There was other players around him, but Bellingham was the most aggressive in terms of his
body language. I'll go back in this.
Yeah.
He hasn't technically made a mistake. He has not technically made a mistake.
But I
saw the other day, and I saw Xhaka, I think Xhaka was talking about unwritten rules.
Yes.
And Stevie was whatever. We could probably sit here for another hour, right? Because technically he's not made a mistake. When the time is up, the time is up, right? Now, we can talk about unwritten rules. This is ambiguous.
Well, can we at least agree that he would have done himself a favour in calling the game when the ball was going out wide? Yep. Once the ball is clear, call it. But once you allow the sequence to continue and the cross to come over and then finish it, then that feels like this is not quite right.
Real Madrid will be appealing that two-match ban that Jude Bellingham at the moment faces, meaning that he will miss Real Madrid's game this weekend, which of course is live on ESPN+. Plus, just a reminder, it is a home against Celta Vigo. That's at 1 p.m. Eastern. Everything changes because the clocks here in the States go forward. They don't change in Europe. So everything is an hour later if you want to kind of play it that way. Today's Wednesday, isn't it? Friday sees Barcelona on Mallorca. I was seriously worried about the clocks and the dates.
Blow your whistle.
2:30 Eastern.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC. Manchester City, well, it was comfortable in the end, beating Copenhagen by 3-1. It was a second string side, pretty much, that Pep Guardiola put out. City then comfortably through to the quarterfinals. I don't think we even talk about this game.
Well, it was a huge bonus for him because you look at the players that he left out.
Well, and of course, he's got the big game
Rodri
at the weekend.
At half-time as well.
He took Rodri off at half-time.
Yeah.
He was able to give youngsters and fringe players game time. You know, obviously, Oscar Bob's done brilliantly for him. Rico Lewis has had game time. So he's, you know, Mateus Nunes. These guys are not starting the big games, barring absolute necessity. So for him, it was about resting key players. Yeah. You know, Kevin De Bruyne, who's been back after almost 6 months out and looking great. That's really the big story, that going into the weekend, that this job was almost over.
And he was almost experimenting at times when we were watching the Diaz was the only player in a defensive position. Akanji, the right-sided centre-half, was playing at right wing, and Guardiola was playing at left wing on the other side. So they just left themselves one at the back, and that just controlled the midfield.
This was pretty much a training session. Mm-hmm. It's what they would have done in the training session for a Wednesday, as they're thinking into the weekend. Yeah, we'll give you 45 minutes, Rodri, you come off the field. And it's the sort of same sort of work that he would have put in at training that day. So ideal preparation for Manchester City. You get a game in, you get goals, you get confidence, you get some momentum, you get the work in, and then you get to rest some players. Ideal for Pep Guardiola.
That's two training sessions, isn't it?
And well, after the United game as well.
That was equally as big a training session.
What do you do if you're Liverpool? They're playing in the Europa League tomorrow against Sparta Prague.
And they've got this horrendous injury list.
Yeah, the injury list, obviously. Salah's travelled with question marks, obviously, whether he'll feature considering what's happening on Sunday.
For me, I'm not risking him in the Europa League.
No.
Because it's such a big prize, this, for Jurgen Klopp. I mean, I'm not suggesting... The Europa League is big, you know, for a lot of teams.
And you've got two chances.
What's that?
In the Europa League. They got the second leg.
Yeah. And so... I'm confused. I've been off the way.
Has he mentioned he's been off?
Yeah.
I'm ill as well.
No. Shaq are ill the other day.
But yeah, I mean, it's such a big prize. It always is, the Premier League, as it is all domestic leagues. But this season, you know, and I heard you guys over the last couple of days, you know, you look at, you know, what City did to United, Arsenal obviously playing great. It's so tight at the moment. It could be a special one at the end of the year. And even more so, the guy's leaving, right? So what does he do, right? Because it's such a... And they've had one in, 30 years where Jurgen Klopp has brought it back. for him to do it again, I think that's where he has to put his eggs into that basket. But that being said, even if he does that, personally, I don't think they'll win it at the end of the year. But he has to be thinking that that's going to give him his best chance. Because if he plays whoever's available in this game in the Europa League and they're 50-50 or even 70-30 and they're injured and it adds to that injury list going forward, there is not a chance then they're going to win this league.
How much would Sunday be on a player's mind going into the tie if they're starting to
play? It'd be on all their minds. Yeah, when you go out on the pitch, you want to put in a good performance. But I don't think many of the people that are going to start against in the Europa League game are going to start the weekend.
Slim pickings, then.
But he's going to have to play. When we talk about the kids, I don't think there's going to be one kid playing against Manchester City on the
right.
And when I looked at the team today, what he could pick with the players that are coming back from injury, once he gets into that game against Man City, there won't be one kid. The only one that might be is Bradley.
You're flying back, obviously, tomorrow.
Yes.
What's your pick for this game on Sunday?
I'm going to go with Manchester City to win the game 2-1.
Really? Why?
1-2. I just think they're purring at the moment. I think they'll have just enough for Liverpool. And if Liverpool plays some of the players like Szoboszlai or Salah, they won't be up to the pace of the game. They won't be at their very best. They might have to come off after 60 minutes. And I think Man City will just about have enough.
We'll, of course, be discussing that game in detail over the next few days. Be sure to join us and hit Europa League action as well on the next edition of the show. Right then, you take a look at the top four odds. If you fancy Manchester United, they are 15-1 to close the gap for Aston Villa, who, of course, currently sit 11 points ahead of Ten Hag's side. The big talking point over the last 24 hours is who could come in. Who is the preferred manager? Let's welcome in Mark Ogden. Mark, give us that top three list.
Well, it's not a top three list. It's a list of names that they are considering. There's more than three names that I've been told, but the three I've been told today are Roberto De Zerbi, Thomas Frank and Gareth Southgate. Now, all different managers, and the other managers that might be out there that are potentially on the list, Graham Potter, Zinedine Zidane, they're all different types of managers, and some will go elsewhere. You know, the problem United have got this summer is that if they do make a change with Ten Hag, Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Liverpool are also looking for new managers. So it's a really congested field, and if they make a change, and it's not been completely decided that Ten Hag will go, they have to be in a position to hire a manager. So I think right now what it is, they've got a regime that's come in to take control of the football operations who have never appointed a manager before. They've got Sir Dave Brailsford, who's a cycling guy. They've got Dan Ashworth coming in. They've got Omar Berardi coming in from Man City, but unlikely any will be there before the start of next season. So they have to address this situation with the manager before the end of the season, because Ten Hag has got a year left of his contract this summer, and they can't go into next season with him not being given a new contract, because that would look a massive lack of faith in Ten Hag. So They've got a mess. They've got a mess to deal with. And obviously, let's be honest, Ten Hag's results, the performances, the tactics, there's not really a lot in Ten Hag's favour right now. So everything is pointing towards a change of manager. But another issue they have to contend with as well is the cost of getting rid of Ten Hag and the cost of hiring a new guy if he's under contract. So they've got all these little issues flying around, which is why they've got such a strange list of potential candidates, which they're assessing all their availability, their suitability. And you know, if they end up with Gareth Southgate, I'd be very surprised. But he's on that list because he could be available this summer.
Bonkers, isn't it? I mean, Roberto De Zerbi, right? He's come in, he's a great reputation. They've been a bit topsy-turvy this season.
They've had a bad run.
They're having a great run in Europe, right? Which is obviously for Brighton. It's a completely different story for them, the European competition. His league form has been patchy, particularly recently. And I think Thomas Frank has done a great job at Brentford, right? The way they recruit down there, how they use the analytics and all that sort of stuff. And I know he was upset at the weekend because his fans were booing when they were behind against Chelsea. And he's like, hey, guys, you know, how far have we come? Sort of stuff. But for me, he's not a Man United manager. I'm sorry, that's a big step. And Gareth Southgate, right, you can forget that. I mean,
build a nice environment.
you can forget. I mean, he's done great with England, don't get me wrong, but you can forget that. So I think even for me, being a big De Zerbi fan, even that for me at the moment is a stretch.
So who?
Wow, that's the question. I don't really know at the moment who else I mean, Zinedine Zidane is not moving to Manchester.
No, that's right. Xabi Alonso's definitely
not going. No, he's not going there.
No! Goodbye, Liverpool.
You say nine. What about Thomas Tuchel?
Thomas Tuchel is actually...
I'd almost take him, even though I would...
Experience-wise, surely.
I would take him over all those in that list.
No three.
Even though I think, you know, obviously Bayern won yesterday, but Lazio were not very good.
But he's managed top clubs.
He has been there, seen it and done it, but again, his stock has fallen.
Yes.
Well, my God, he has to be better than what's on that list.
Graham Potter?
No. I'm sorry, Graham Potter had his chance at Chelsea, didn't take it.
But other people have failed at Chelsea.
Other people have been successful at Chelsea as well.
Since the new regime came in, Robert, that's harsh.
Yeah, but I think he was the first one of the new regime, wasn't he?
Well, yes, but you judge him by that?
Yeah. From what I could see, he didn't have control of the players. The players didn't seem to want to play for him. He messed around with the tactics. He messed around with the team. As a manager, you've got to deal with what you're given. And he didn't do that, I don't think, at Chelsea.
So you would go Tuchel?
I would go Tuchel. I'm not a great fan of Tuchel in terms of his mannerisms and the way he talks to the press and all that sort of stuff. But he did well at Chelsea for a good year and a half. He won the Champions League with them. He's done well at other clubs. He was at PSG, so he's dealt with big players. He plays a decent style of football. So for me, Thomas Tuchel, out of all those, as you said, is the best one available.
But he has been awful at Bayern.
Well, yes, he has. And I think handling the environment of Bayern Munich, he has had difficulties with the politics of Bayern Munich. So I imagine that there are politics in Manchester United as well. I don't know why we're talking about a new manager from Manchester United. 10 days ago, we're talking about Manchester United turning the corner. Oh, look at this team is flying. Look at all the results they're getting and this and that and the other. And frankly, when you look deeply into Manchester United, you know that they're deeply flawed. Mm. And Ten Hag is at the core of all of this. In terms of who makes a decision to go to Manchester United right now, you have to have somebody who has had a fall from grace. And I think Thomas Tuchel at Bayern Munich has had a fall from grace.
And one of the reasons we're talking about Erik ten Hag is because of the things he said after the Manchester City game. Yeah. You know, we played well. We nearly won the game.
Yeah,
those sort of things turn the fans off. It turns the board off. We didn't play well.
And the players, by the way, because the players must have been thinking... No, we didn't.
Yeah. No,
they were knocking the ball around us and we were barely hanging on and hoping that we could see this game out, and there was never a chance.
We looked at the stats on here a couple of weeks ago before the Fulham game, and we looked at the stats because people were getting carried away.
Yeah.
And we said, here's the results that you're getting carried away with, and here's the actual facts of the game. And United barely have ever controlled a game, right? And every team they've played
against
inferior opposition, getting dominated in the middle of the park, Anana's having to make save after save after save, and we said, this can't last, and it won't last. And it's pie-in-the-sky stuff to think they'll even catch Tottenham, never mind Aston Villa. You know, Villa would have to lose four or five games, and United would have to win almost every game between now and end of the season. The problem is you're not going to be able to... You can change the manager at the moment, right, or whenever you want to change him. But it's going to take you time to get some of these wasters out of the club, right? And so in that time frame, while you're trying to get rid of the wasters that are in the playing squad, if you bring a manager in who's weak and who hasn't got the experience of being at a big club like this, they're going to continue to throw these people under the bus. So there has to be some element of strength as well as forward vision to who you're going to appoint.
But we mentioned Chelsea. No matter what manager they bring in, they don't seem to be able to get a tune out of this squad. Are Manchester United in danger of going down the same route because of the personnel they have within their team that they're just not good enough? So it doesn't matter who you bring in as a coach.
Well, they're going to have to make personnel changes in the playing front. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And I know Marcus Rashford scored a great goal at the weekend, but he'd be one of the first in the bus out the door. Get on the bus, son, don't come back. If I could get money from him, and there's a list of them. But that's going to be difficult. But again, I go back to the argument. There is a slight argument against it in terms of, you know, with Chelsea this season and others, is that what, to a certain extent, Postecoglou has done at Tottenham.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, would they finish eighth last season? Right, they might not get in the top four. They might or they might not. But they finished eighth. They had the best striker in Europe, who, by the way, is still scoring goals for fun at Bayern. And they were absolutely wretched to watch. They don't have that player now. They're playing some of the best football in the Premier League, all right? They've had some ups and downs. And they've got a chance of getting in the top four. So I think it's difficult all the time to say, well, this manager can't do more with this group of players. There is an element of the
Alonso's a great example.
With the manager.
Alonso's a great example. When he went to Leverkusen, they were second from bottom.
Yeah.
And he must have gone in there, and everybody probably said, and you would be doing the games, they've got poor players. Leverkusen aren't a good team. Mm. He comes in and he turns things around immediately, right. And they're now going to win the title. So a manager can have a massive, have a massive effect on a team. It's difficult, but they can have a massive effect on the team.
So you see how he pointed the finger at me that I said?
Yeah, you said.
Mark, who would you choose?
Wow. It's a tough one. I mean, I like Tuchel as well, but I think we've had this conversation now for maybe the last 5 years, the last three managers. The players are letting them down. The players need clearing out. They never get cleared out. Victor Lindelof's been there 8 years, Luke Shaw, 10 years. Lots of players that have been there through a series of different managers. And nothing seems to change. So whoever comes in, yes, they'll press the reset button. And yes, it'll be a new start. But they've got to sort that dressing room out and got to get some more out of the players. You know, I keep hearing a lot about De Zerbi. I keep hearing that everybody wants De Zerbi, that all the clubs that are out there, that he's the guy that everybody wants. And, you know, I do think there are issues at Brighton, but, you know, he's been without Enciso all season. Evan Ferguson's been missing quite a lot this season. He lost his two best midfielders in the summer, but he's still got Brighton competitive. So maybe he is the next big thing. I don't know. We won't know until he gets that chance. And I think rather than take a chance on Tuchel, who, let's be honest, had a difficult time at Chelsea under a new regime, it lasted about 5 minutes because he didn't think they knew what they were doing. So if he has a similar situation at United with a new regime, it could be fireworks. So I'd go for De Zerbi and the chance that for once United get a guy on the way up that's actually got something to prove, not Ten Hag, and just give a guy the chance. But like you say, that list isn't an ideal list. I wouldn't go for Potter. I think Potter failed at Chelsea, a similar job, similar scenario, similar dressing room. So I'd go for De Zerbi and, you know, eyes closed, fingers crossed, and see what happens next.
A really positive thought.
I hope your pilot's got a better outlook.
Not on that skinny runway.
This is the captain speaking, eyes closed.
Fingers crossed, everyone.
Fingers crossed, oh. But arguably the best coach in England, not in England, out with Klopp and Guardiola, the best one that's not on that list, that's probably ungettable, is Unai Emery.
Yeah.
Mm. Unai Emery, he's a bit of everything. His sides play good football, but don't try and overplay. You know, he works on the team shape. You can tell he works on patterns of play and team shape, and he's got experience.
Would you be tempted to go if you were him?
That's a difficult one. I mean, Aston Villa, they're a great story at the moment. I mean, they've been former European champions, a big club, but it's still Man United. Mm. But then, does he want it? I'm not suggesting he's even thinking about it, or they want him. But would he want to jump out of that into that fire at Man United? He got burnt a bit at Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, would he be frightened of the Arsenal experience?
Yeah, he got burnt at Arsenal. But he's got experience. I mean, he's been successful in Spain.
But his English is much better. That one of the reasons he failed at Arsenal is because he didn't come across particularly well with the press, and the players didn't quite understand what he was trying to do. He's come a long way with his English since then, and I think he'd be a much better coach. And he's
done a great job. I mean, wherever he's been, he's generally done a great job. Arsenal was a difficult one at Arsenal at the time. It took Arteta a while to turn it round. But you look at not just what he's done with Villa, but what he did with Villarreal. Look at Villarreal now. Mm-hmm. Villarreal, how many have they got had since
although
he left?
You could throw he's been in charge of two big clubs, in Arsenal and PSG, and he didn't do anything at either of them. So why would Manchester United feel that he could do...
I know, but I'm only throwing them in there.
There's not that many managers because you can keep talking about
because that's completely running
out. Manchester United cannot go after the top tier.
Yes.
And that's the reality of Manchester United.
What about Zinedine Zidane?
Yes. Did I tell you he's not going to Manchester? Well, they cannot go after top tier, and so you have to go for the up-and-comer and hoping that that's a guy, you know.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Who would be De Zerbi?
De Zerbi had a great spell. Was it in Ukraine or was it in Russia?
Ukraine.
Where I think he won 20 out of 20 games at one point. So he has been at a big club that were in the Champions League.
I'm sure that if you're making the decision on a manager to come to Manchester United,
you're not thinking about
what he did in Ukraine and however.
But I think if De Zerbi was where sort of Villa are at the moment and that had continued and he was really sort of the apple of everybody's eye, as he has been in patches, but it's kind of waned a little bit. And I think if he'd been up there, it would have been an easier sell for the club. I just think at the moment, all those names are quite a difficult sell.
What would it take for Ten Hag to still be in charge at the start of the season, Mark?
I think he has to get in the Champions League, and it's looking very difficult to do that. I don't think winning the FA Cup and finishing fifth or sixth would be enough. I think it's deeper than that with Ten Hag. I think, you know, a lot of it isn't working at United. The players don't look happy. Some of them aren't happy. We know that. The tactics, like I said, the results have been poor. the goal difference is terrible. They're on minus two. You know, it's Man United. They've got all this great attacking talent. So it's not just about injuries that they've had. They've had a really bad run of everything. So I don't know. A new regime comes in. It's very rare that a new regime comes in football and doesn't change the manager within 6 months. I mean, it's hard to find a club that hasn't had that kind of turnover. So I don't think anything really can save Ten Hag, apart from possibly the financial element, in the sense that it will cost them around £14 million to move him on. £14 million. You're talking about £12 million to get to Zerbi. All of a sudden, that's £26 million. And then, you know, that's a player. And United need a lot of players, and they've got to get rid of a few this summer as well. So it could come down to basic economics, but it wouldn't be great if United keep a manager because they can't afford to get rid of him. That isn't a great message to send at the start of a new era. So I think Ten Hag goes this summer, but they have got a big problem finding the right guy to replace him, because as you guys have discovered, there's not an obvious candidate out there.
Just put £1.25 billion of investment in, with more to come. They're not going to do that and keep a guy who is becoming clearer and clearer is not cut for this job.
Sorry, they'll sell Anthony for £100 million. Boom, there's your money.
Well, when he sits there and says Anthony will come good, amongst the many, many things as Robbo has mentioned, and we've sat here since day one of this Premier League season, and he has rabbited on with some of the biggest nonsense. Instead of just coming out and telling it straight, and we could all sit here and the media boys and the guys that write the headlines in the back of the papers are saying, OK, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's fair enough, not good enough for that or that. But he's come out and, oh, my God, you've only got to have a smitten of common sense to see that he's talking absolute nonsense. He's gone.
Of course, the last chance for a bit of silverware for Manchester United is the FA Cup. We're at the quarter-final stages of a competition that you can see live on ESPN+. March 16th, Wolves against Coventry, then it's Manchester City against Newcastle, followed by Chelsea against Leicester, and then Manchester United against Liverpool. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, huge game tonight, of course, as we see those two semi-finals in the Women's CONCACAF Gold Cup. It starts Brazil against Mexico in what, just under 20 minutes time. And then it's the big one at 10 o'clock, Canada against the US women. We welcome in Sebastian Salazar to look ahead to that tie. Seb, it's been quite the roller coaster so far for fans of the US. Could that defeat against Mexico proved to be a blessing in disguise going forward, given their performance in the quarterfinal?
Yeah, I mean, given the performance against Mexico, seeing what they did against Colombia, I think, puts a lot of those worries to rest. It's also worth noting, Dan, that half of the lineup that we saw against Mexico has not been the starting 11 that we saw, A, in the good performance against Colombia, or in their best group phase performance against Argentina. I think this is a U.S. team that's coming in flying off the game against Colombia, not just for the good performance, but the chippy nature of that game. It seemed to bring the best out of this U.S. team. They're flying with Alex Morgan, who was left off the team to start the tournament, really leading the attack. Jaden Shaw is another player who's kind of come good in this tournament, 19-year-old, who I think is going to be maybe a starter at the Olympics, forget just a bubble player on the squad. It's always a rivalry game, Dan, against Canada. It's usually low scoring. It's usually pretty gritty. Canada haven't conceded a goal, not just in this tournament, but going back to late October of last year. But I don't think they have the firepower here to really, truly trouble this U.S. team if the United States starts the back five that they've been using for most of this tournament outside that Mexico game.
History, of course, you mentioned very much on the U.S.'s side. In fact, you have to go back to what the Olympics, remember the semifinals in Tokyo in 2021 when they last won. How big an upset would it be if it is indeed Canada who make it through to the final, Seb?
I mean, it wouldn't be an upset. One, let's acknowledge the state of this U.S. team. Yeah, they put up three against Colombia the other day, but they're coming off their worst World Cup in history. Now, Canada, yes, they're the reigning Olympic champions, but they didn't have a great World Cup last time around either. So it's two teams that are kind of in a generational transition. I think the United States is a little bit ahead. It would be an upset, but it wouldn't be a shocking upset because of what Canada is at the world level. That's not to say, Dan, that it wouldn't be a devastating defeat for the United States. This team absolutely needs to build up confidence after this World Cup performance from last year. And after this, there's really only one more tournament to go in April. It's the She Believes Cup. If you don't build confidence there, you're going into the Olympics at pretty much, for this U.S. program, what would be an all-time low. If they're to lose this game against Canada, that's two out of five games in a tournament on home soil that you've lost with less than 6 months to go to a major tournament. So really big stakes, I think, here tonight for the American team.
Appreciate it, Seb. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, you can see that game live on ESPN Plus tonight. And then a special, Football Americas drops tomorrow. Full reaction to that game. And they'll be looking ahead, of course, to the final as well. ESPN, then, the new home of the NWSL. It all kicks off March the 16th. Casey Curran taking on a Portland Thorns. Coverage starts at 1 p.m. Eastern, live on Plus and ABC.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Meanwhile, to the Bundesliga we go. Of course, it's all about Bayer Leverkusen. They're in action on Sunday in the late game, 2:30 Eastern, as they play host to Wolfsburg. Meanwhile, Bayern Munich take on Mainz on the Saturday. That's at 9:30. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for joining us. But if you want more Robbo before he leaves, or more stories of Craig being away, be sure to stay tuned as Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig's still got his car. Can you have left that in Alabama?
Month.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's peaks and troughs, Robbo.
Yeah, is it? Comes in here and it gets a lot worse.
Left me.
How was your holiday? Did you have a lovely time?
Not a holiday, it was a golf trip.
Well, it's exactly, of course it's a holiday.
I went for hot weather golf and it was cold.
Lovely.
Very cold in Alabama.
Oh, wow. Did you take that well?
Well, we had to soldier on because we were there.
Right.
And it was paid for.
Yeah,
so, so there was no backing out. Oh, right. Boy. We'll put it one way.
Did you win?
No. Not at that competition. The drinking competition.
Yes. Drinking the coffin competition.
Yeah. Put it one way, without boring you the whole story. The first day we got there, it was warm and a cold front came in and it was freezing. And when you're on a golf trip, you don't expect on the morning of day two the boys to be flooding into Dick's Sporting Goods to buy all the winter gear. That's not.
But didn't you go round in your shorts?
What do you mean?
You went round in short trousers.
And the first
and
day
it's
I went
freezing cold. No wonder you got a cough.
And the first day I went with. All right. The first day.
Answer the question.
He's been a bit like this.
Has he?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
he's been a bit shouty.
Feisty.
That's all right. So it was. It's just the wrong time of year to go there. Which the guy who organised the trip, Sandro, has been.
Well, yeah.
He has been.
When you go to like Arizona or somewhere, that would be.
Well, I was sent him for months.
I bet.
Palm Springs, Sandro. No, Alabama.
Craig's not the sort of person to go, don't worry about it. We know you tried your best. Yes. Thanks for
organising. All the lads were giving. It was a good trip.
Sounds great. All these questions about if Vinny Jr. deserved a red card. But all I want to know is, are you guys having a good day? Are there good vibes in the office this Wednesday?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Has there been bad vibes when I've been away?
No, I don't think so.
Because I normally get...
Some said there's been better vibes when you've been away.
Well, you said there's better vibes. The bad vibes normally get blamed on me.
Well,
How does that happen? I think
generally. And I have been...
I thought you were happy-go-lucky.
I've been away
Everybody
for a
tells
week.
Me that.
Yeah. Listen, people in glass houses shouldn't... So what's the bad vibes? Is Robbo? Did he bring over the boxing gloves and he's been like?
No, I think he's been good.
I had a night out. Stevie came back to the hotel and had a couple of drinks with me,
and that's a good thing.
Yeah. With 10 minutes to go, when his wife was picking him up, he said, "I'll get another three in quickly."
You know,
as you do.
Then we had dinner last night.
Very wonderful. Nice,
what was great. The bill comes, so we're with Ali and Kay. Robert goes, "Don't worry, me and Dan will pay for this." Oh, thanks. Oh, well, I didn't get dragged into
this. I tried to pay and I was denied.
Who had the most food and most drink out of all four of us?
Just put that, do you know why? He's not stupid. He'll put his on expenses.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, no,
mine's
not. Mine's not on expenses.
Exactly.
Let me tell you, mine's not on expensive. Don't worry about that.
Such a gentleman. Kay, don't worry about paying. We have this. Goodness me. Made me sick.
Oh, we had great conversation.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Very good.
Has this been the most boring set of Champions League knockout ties you've ever seen?
What's going to happen next year when they change the format?
Do you want me to explain it to you?
No, you don't want to explain it.
36 teams.
I know what it is, but I mean, it's going to be. I think we're going to see more of this. Possibly.
That's what they're trying to change.
Yeah, they're trying to make it a little more interesting. It just was the draw. The draw always, when we looked at it, there weren't that many blockbuster ties, and it's played out pretty much.
The best game has been Real Madrid versus Leipzig, because Leipzig had a chance.
But so quality. Like, what quality have we seen?
Well, Porto, Arsenal's second leg might not be bad.
Exactly, that's the interesting. But you look at it, and I think it pretty much is going the way we expected.
Atletico Inter?
Yes, that's
a good game.
Yeah, that is a good game.
Doing that on Tuesday.
All right.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
A lot of Inter fans upset because Frank said that.
Yeah, they've regressed this season. When in fact they've actually
actually gotten better.
Yeah, Inter have.
Italian fans getting upset. How does that work?
Very much so. But of course,
Atleti Inter's going to be a great
good game.
Most definitely. Yeah, should be very good. If Arsenal go through and draws Real Madrid in the quarterfinals, how does Robbo see that tie playing out over two legs?
The way both teams are playing at the moment, I would say Arsenal would win in the tie because at the moment Arsenal are difficult to play against. If you try and squeeze them high up the field, they play around you. And if you drop deep, like Sheffield United did and other teams have done, Burnley, and sit there and sit deep, they've got enough quality in and around the box. They're the best team in and around the box at the moment. They're cut you open then. So at the moment, I could see Arsenal winning that game quite comfortably.
That's fair, isn't it?
Well, it's an element of team speed that Arsenal have and energy all over the field that Real Madrid haven't shown over the last month or so. And that has to improve. And it's not only energy and intensity without the ball defensively, but also in the moving of the ball. If you're going to play at Arsenal, you know that they're going to move the ball quickly. You're Real Madrid, you have to be able to match that pace with your own possession and control the pace of the game. If you get in a back and forth with Arsenal, it feels like you're playing right into their hands, and Arsenal would be much better at that than Real Madrid.
The one thing that Arteta would have to do, he couldn't play Jorginho up against Bellingham. Well, he'd have to bring Rice back to play against Bellingham. Right. That'd be a great battle between two.
But then that would probably move Havertz back into midfield. Yeah. And as much as Havertz has done well recently, he's done well from a forward position. Mm. Whenever he plays in the midfield, Arsenal are weaker side. Don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. And then people will say, "Oh yeah, but he played in there against Burnley." Or yeah, but that's those teams. Not in the big games where the elite players could dominate the middle of the park. If he manoeuvres him back in, that's then a problem. Mm. So
I wouldn't fancy Bellingham. I wouldn't fancy Jorginho against Bellingham.
No, he'd have to make a change. But Arsenal, I've said this for a while. They're the best team. Certainly the best team in England. at pinning someone in their own half and not letting them out.
When that draw's made, nobody wants Arsenal. No one wants Manchester City.
Absolutely not. What I would say about Real Madrid is that whenever we have seen them lately in this competition and when they won it a couple of years back, they won it by absorbing a lot of pressure and going out in moments of transition. Now, the difference back then as to what it is now is that you had a guy like Karim Benzema who can score that big goal. And now you're looking around and thinking, well, who's going to be that guy? But you still have the personnel of Vini Jr. to get out in transition, or Rodrigo to get out in transition, Valverde as well, and now the added value of Jude Bellingham. They're going to absorb some pressure against a team like Arsenal. My concern would be is, once they're pinned down, as this guy's just mentioned, is Real Madrid good enough defensively to withstand that pressure?
And without Courtois, without Militao.
And does Ancelotti pick the right formation and the system, which he didn't
do today? They were going through that, they had a proper goalkeeper in back four, didn't they?
Exactly.
They don't have that. Simple.
Dan, please tell me why coaches overthink. Madrid would have given us a breathtaking counter if they'd gone toe-to-toe with Leipzig. Why did Carlo play a Pep on us? Well, I've got many thoughts on this, but I feel that it may be wise to go to everybody else.
No, no, go ahead, Dan.
I don't have any
thoughts. No, it's Dan.
You're the Real Madrid man.
Yeah. No, I don't have any thoughts,
to be honest. No, but it says Dan.
I think everyone's covered it beautifully in the show.
Oh, wow.
No,
I don't think Ancelotti tried to do a... What's doing a Pep anyway? Overthinking?
Overthinking.
I don't think he really did. I mean, maybe they sat in a little bit, but that's just kind of who they are at the moment.
Yeah.
They're not playing brilliantly. They're not dominating teams. They've dropped a few points recently. I kind of think that's who they are. You can get at them.
But he did change. Rodrigo, I think, had to play in the game.
Oh, he changed the personnel in the system. Yeah.
Robert, you've seen a lot, probably a lot more Inter than we have. If Arsenal or Inter were to play Madrid tomorrow, would they walk over Madrid?
If Arsenal or Inter?
Let's forget Arsenal. We've talked about Arsenal, haven't we? Yeah, let's talk
Inter are a good side at the moment. Thuram and Martinez form a good partnership up front. You love this. The wing-backs love to get forward. DiMarco down one side, and then they've got a combination down. They can play Dumfries or Darmian, depending who's in better form or who's fit. Midfield, that's probably their weakness defensively. Mkhitaryan, Çalhanoğlu, they're the two players in there that you wouldn't say are great defensively. Barella makes good forward runs. I think they're a match for Real Madrid. I think it'll be a very tight game.
So did you say Real Madrid or Atletico?
Real Madrid.
Yeah. We were talking about that if Real Madrid got through and
Arsenal... They're a match for Real.
And of course, they're home and hosed. They don't have to worry about the league. They're going to win the league, so then it can all be about, you know, your next two legs.
And the only reason that this is going to be potentially a great game, it's not because Atleti went over there and did an Atleti job on them. It's because Inter Milan were not clinical enough in the final third. Yeah. This could have been 3-0, possibly 4-0. Job done, finito, if they'd have taken their chances, particularly Arnautovic, who did get a goal but missed a couple of others. He wasn't the only one. So if Atleti defend and play in that manner, even at home, They'll get beat. It's a good Inter side.
Yeah.
I just want Inter and Arsenal because remember Don was harping on.
Oh yeah.
I never forget.
See. What a quarter final.
Remember Don was like almost crying when he said, "Look, Arsenal might be too good for Inter."
Yes.
Yeah, the Serie A hat on.
I'd be careful if I were Inter against Atletico Madrid.
Oh yeah.
I agree.
Madrid at home, Civita Metropolitano, is a different team with a different personality. Be careful.
What about Real Madrid over two legs if those two face off then?
Be careful with Real Madrid.
Really?
I'm not making the mistake of overlooking Real Madrid in Champions League unless we get to a point in which we're talking about Manchester City.
You know what's going to happen in the quarterfinals? Real Madrid PSG. It's all about Mbappe. All that story will be.
So. But you're picking Real Madrid in that case.
You are picking them, yes, because PSG aren't of the standard of Inter, I think.
If Atleti play as they played in the San Siro, they won't win.
No.
But if the side that we've seen quite often this season turns up, particularly at home, it's got great game written all over it. But I was worried when I saw how they performed in the San Siro against Inter. It was not good.
Finally, what Europa League match is the crew looking forward to watching on tomorrow?
Look at me. I'm going to be travelling at some point.
You'll be travelling.
I've got a much-needed day off.
What?
I know that sounds...
You off tomorrow?
You've had a month off. You've got another day off.
You've had a month off.
Schedulers.
Oh, yeah. What? I can't watch Europa League because I got to see Cher the Musical tomorrow.
No, listen, when you've had a cold week in...
What?
Listen, when you've had a cold week in Alabama, freezing your watsits off.
Oh, bro. Right,
there's no way I can be put on the Europa League.
No.
That's punishment.
Right, Stephen Shack over here. And you're driving down to... How long's that drive?
It's only 13 hours.
13 hours, yeah, so that'd be lovely. Wow, very nice. Good. Will you listen to anything?
No, we've just dismissed Europa League there, have we?
Well, no, everyone's got other commitments.
No, we have people that come in and
there you are.
Give it the full commitment.
Stevie and Shaka will be all over it.
Bayer Leverkusen, Karabakh. You know my allegiances to Bundesliga.
They're still going. Oh, yeah, they could win everything. There we are.
In fact, you are Mr. Bundesliga.
Yeah, well,
you are.
There we go. So when are you back? Are you going to do Friday?
Well, I'll think about it.
See what happens. Rob, have a lovely trip.
Thank you very much.
He normally leaves on an evening, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he panics. He panics. Right. So if the flight's at like 10 o'clock...
Understandable. And also, the show is later than it used to be. I used to leave at 6 o'clock. It's now 6.
That's not happening.
No, exactly. But we're going to have a nice rest for them tonight.
Well, I'm leaving at 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's it. That brings the end of today's show. As we said, none of us will be here tomorrow. So you'll probably enjoy it more.
Hey!
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.